When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, a special friend, a return of a previous guest, Leo Gonzalez. How you doing, Leo?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. This is, I think, your third time actually on here. I have to go back into the archives to check, but before I do that, this is actually the part of the podcast where I ask our guests, which is yourself, about yourself, where you've been, where you at, and where are you heading?
All right. I'll give you the short version. All right. I'll work my way backwards. So right now, co-founder of a independent co-dev virtual studio, doing art primarily for a multitude of clients like AAA games, console, PC games, VR, as well as enterprise clients and partners that are not even in the game space. So companies like Target and Lucasfilm, who are using Unreal Engine in real-time dev to do cool, you know, new innovative stuff. And been doing that since, I don't know, about 3 or 4 years now. Before that, I was at a studio here in Austin. I'm still in Austin. Moved from LA to Austin to join a studio. Left that after 3 years to go independent and be an entrepreneur. And then before that, worked in LA, also in games. And that's actually where I met up with Brandon and some other good peoples that I still keep in touch with. On the dev side, doing VFX and lighting is my specialty, but I've kind of jumped around the pipeline over the years. I've done environment art and world building, been a texture artist. At one point, didn't really enjoy it, but I used to do like rigging and character animation. Wasn't my thing though. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Great, man. And, you know, Godemix, for listeners and viewers out there, is, of course, a partnership between Leo and myself, and it's primarily what I do from my day to day. And it's great to kind of bring you on because there's a couple of topics regarding to that external development. But I think before we even go into that, let's talk about a little bit back history where we met at Spark, right? I think physically we working next to each other is probably the shortest amount that I ever worked with someone at a G job, which is around 68 months, right? And we were working, we actually started the same day. And sometimes I forget that we showed up day one having the same HR orientation. And I think there was a spark, right? No pun intended or pun intended, that happened there that really helped us kind of get going with that new experience because you were new in LA. I think that was my first time working in LA and commuting there. And it was, to me, it wasn't my first new company, but it was my second new game company of being familiar with a place and now leaving it in this like completely new environment and new people. So it was kind of great to kind of start on the first day. If you don't mind kind of sharing your perspective on that first day. Because it was just me.
I actually, yeah, we definitely tango and cashed the orientation. I still remember Kate was her name for HR. She kind of looked at us and she's like, do you guys mind if I just give you guys orientation at the same time to save me time? And I'm just, yeah. I'm like, I don't.
It's unusual to have.
Okay.
We were cool with that. Yeah. And that's where we met.
Yeah. I guess she was really busy and stuff that day. I actually didn't know that was your first time working in LA too. That's the first time I knew that.
Yeah, first time. definitely definitely a scar. It was my first, and I think a total of maybe three times that I worked at companies in LA, but that was my first time. I live in Orange County, commuting to LA, working in LA, and just being a part of that scene. So it was a new experience in that way, you know.
Yeah, I had just moved to LA as well. I made a big change. I went from Miami to LA, Florida to California. And I was just like, man, why didn't I do this before? It's one of those things, a huge upgrade going from Miami to LA. It's like going from zero to hero. Yeah. People from Miami know what I'm talking about. But
well,
we won't get into that.
Or Miami. Can you kind of bust through those myths about Miami being a party city, being fantastic? I was surprised when you told me that it was just basically a block of beach that just gets featured in movies, and that's what people kind of glamorize. But Miami's anything but that, if you can kind of share that side of it.
Ooh, man, we could do a whole podcast on Miami. I can bring on like some guest speakers who know the real Miami, and they'll tell you the same thing. Growing up in Miami, and I'll keep this short because this could go on and on and on. But yeah, growing up in Miami in, you know, 80s and 90s, it was, I think it made places like, you know, what people think of like Compton and Watts and other tough areas look super tame. Yeah. I mean, there were neighborhoods where even the cops wouldn't go into because it was like third world. Like you'd go in and it didn't look like you were in any place in the US. It was nobody maintaining sidewalks or lawns or anything. It kind of looks like you're in another country, and there's dudes with, can we get into that? Are you cool if I keep it kind of real? Yeah. There's dudes with AKs and Tech Nines and Mac 10s and stuff. And they'll shoot it out with the cops. I haven't been there in years. But when I grew up there, that's how it was. It was like gunshots, there was police helicopters all the time.
Damn.
A lot of shootings. That was normal on the news. Like when you'd watch like Channel 7 news or whatever, it would always be another shooting in Coral Gables, another shooting in Hialeah, another shooting in Overtown, SWAT team standoff in Little Haiti and stuff like that. It was pretty crazy. There were places you didn't go to. Downtown Miami, you would not. There was like an unwritten rule where everyone who you know was from Miami knew. They just knew that at sundown, you cannot be walking around or be anywhere in downtown Miami. Like you just had to be out of there. It was just something that you did. It was like an unwritten rule you kind of followed. And it's pretty crazy place. It's a very dog-eat-dog kind of environment and stuff. If you ever seen like the, if you go back and watch a 90s movie called The Principal with, I forgot his name. Is it Jim Belushi or James Belushi? I forget which one of the Belushi brothers. He made this movie called The Principal, like in the 90s. And it's like this horrible high school and there's gangs and you're just like, man, that looks like a prison. That's how high schools were when I grew up in Miami, like North Miami Senior, Pioneers, JFK Middle School. All those, that's exactly how it was. Like when I saw the movies, I was like, oh, was this filmed here? Like, huh, that looks familiar.
Well, that,
and then when I go ahead,
telling me, it really does kind of help shape me because I didn't know it was that bad. Like straight up District 9 people walking
around, yeah,
being dangerous and stuff.
It's pretty terrible. It's changed now.
Okay, it's better now. Last time you visited?
I think so. I went back in 2014. I decided to, it had been long enough and maybe I'll go back to Miami and visit because, you know, my immediate family still lives there and stuff. So I made the mistake of saying, all right, I'm going to take PTO from work. This is when I worked at my last studio and I'm going to take a week of PTO off for the week of Thanksgiving and just go back for like a whole week. Within 24 hours, I regretted it. In fact, within, I got to the Fort Lauderdale airport because that's a trick in South Florida. You don't want to go to MIA, Miami International, because it's always backed up and there's always like tons and tons of lines of people. So what you do is you fly into Fort Lauderdale. There's a little bit less traffic and it's always cheaper. The flights in and out of Fort Lauderdale are always cheaper, even though it's like right up the road. So I went there, rented a car. And as soon as I drove out of the airport, there was, and this was like at 9 p.m., like traffic's all backed up on I-95. And I'm just like, oh boy, here we go. Yep, I remember this. But there was a bunch of traffic because some dude carrying, I don't know, like palm trees and like farm animal stuff, like just spilled a bunch of crap all over I-95, mm-hmm. which is typical of Miami. Like people will do like the weirdest things and carry the strange. Like it's not unusual to see somebody with like a mattress tied to the roof of their Honda Civic mm-hmm. with like, and you look at it and you're like, dude, that's not secured. Right. You know, people kind of like half ass and just do things that are very abnormal to like the rest of the US. So you'll see like weird stuff like that. And yeah, I was just like, oh geez, here we go. It's Miami again. Like, for example, you know how, a lot of highways in different parts of the US will have like the HOV lane. And then you have those like little, they're almost like these little rubber cylinder things or whatever, like dividers, but they're like these individual like prongs that they put right to like show the drivers like, hey, this is the HOV lane. Like once you're in it, you can't just go to the other lanes. You have to stay in there. Well, like here in Austin, Texas, they have that. And nobody ever hits those things unless there's like a car accident or something like that. But it's super rare to see even one of those little prongs knocked down. You go to Miami to I-95, nobody respects that. You see the HOV lane and the regular lanes, and all you see is the prongs just spilled all over the road all the time. Because every time they put them up, people are like, I ain't listening to that. And they just run it over. They don't care. They'll hit it with their cars and stuff. And yeah, people don't follow rules in Miami. People just kind of make up their own rules. That's an actual thing. That's not metaphorical.
Well, like growing up in an environment like that, that is disorderly and seems kind of dangerous. Like when did you first get a glimpse of like, oh, this isn't normal. Like there is a better route about going to make life better for yourself. Because it sounds like you really, once you left, you really had trepidation to come back in 2014. When was that first experience out of that little bubble where you felt like, hey, this is somewhere else that's better opportunities?
Oh, I already kind of knew even as a kid that there was something wrong with the place and something wrong with like the way that the majority of people kind of think. Like the culture is very toxic and very like when I grew up, a lot of friends that I knew from elementary school as they grew up ended up in like gangs and stuff. Mm. So I already knew that there was something like off, but I think when I was a kid, you know, Orlando's like a few hours away. So a lot of people from like South Florida will go to Orlando for like summer vacation stuff, like go to like Disney World. And when you're a Florida resident, you get like really good discounts. Yeah. So when I was a kid, my dad would take us to like Orlando. We'd go to like either Universal or like Disney for like a couple of days. And we would usually do that for a few days in the summer or whatever. And when you'd go to Orlando in those days, like 80s and early 90s, Orlando was pristine. Yeah. It was like a completely different world. You'd go there. Everything was nice and orderly. People would listen to the rules. You'd be at a Walmart or something and everyone was just really nice and cordial, and the cashiers, nobody had like an attitude or a chip on their shoulder or anything like that. And again, everything was nice and clean. And I mean that both figuratively and like physically, like the streets and sidewalks, you're not going to see syringes on the floor, trash and stuff like that. It was really clean and nice. So I don't know. I guess I always saw it as like, oh man, you know, Orlando's such a nice place, and it'd be cool if we lived there one day or something like that, right? As a kid, that's what you're thinking. Then you end up going back to Miami, and it's back to reality and stuff like that. But unfortunately, Orlando's not like that anymore.
I've never been there, so I guess it's gotten worse because.
Oh yeah, Orlando's turned into a sister city to Miami. Like, it's totally changed. A lot of crime. It's just, it has a lot of similarities from Miami. Like, it's just absorbed a lot of that. Yeah, I guess that's to answer your question. That's when I used to see like the difference, the dichotomy between a place like Miami and a place that's the complete opposite was when I was a kid. And whenever we'd go on road trips out of Miami, it's like the world changed. It's almost like GTA. You're like in the crappy part of GTA where you hear people walk around saying stuff like, my mother's my sister. Mm-hmm. And you hear gunshots or whatever in the game. And then you drive out to other parts of the world of the game where it may not be that way, and like different assets load in and stuff. That's basically how it felt. You get on I-95, you drive north, and the Miami kind of sphere starts to like fade away, and the world turns into something else. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's how it felt.
Well, I mean, what's sort of still a mystery. I only know a little bit about this, that you've had military discipline and training. Like, can you kind of talk about that part? Because I'm trying to build Leo the character in my mind of Leo the partner right now, right? And a lot of this stuff is we never really talked about, and I think it really does shape how you work and how you see the industry and how you're kind of applying to what you do right now. But like, have you always, did you have family in the military? Where did this come from?
No, I was the only one that did anything athletic. In my family, nobody did any athletics. Nobody did. They didn't participate in anything. They just kind of kept to themselves and didn't really do anything. So I played football in high school. I was in Navy, JROTC. Originally, I wanted to join the Marine Corps. I got DQ'd, disqualified at MEPS, the military enlistment processing, because of my eyes. It happens. A lot of people get disqualified by things like that. So I got disqualified, and I was just like, holy crap, man, that's what I was going to do. What do I do now? But when I played football, the coach I had, his name was Joe Myra. No idea where he is now, but he was a great leader. I've read a phrase, and I've heard a phrase before that kind of goes around. I believe it goes something like, leader, be a leader of men. And you know, to a lot of people that means different things, but you know, to me, that's somebody who can walk into a room and command the attention of everyone just by being a good leader, you know, not by like yelling louder than everybody else or, you know, throwing something across the room. But, my high school football coach, he was definitely a leader among men. And when he would walk in, people would just stop their shenanigans and stop goofing around. They'd be like, uh-oh, like, you know, get the kind of attention and pay attention and stuff. And then in NGRTC, it was kind of the same thing. Had this guy, he was a retired from the Vietnam era. He was a Navy, lieutenant commander, and he was really good, really smart guy, but a good leader, kind of quiet, only talked when he needed to. But when he did, he kind of put you in your place and stuff in a good way. So I don't know. I've always kind of been around that, I guess, since I was young. So that kind of molded my personality a bit. And I naturally tend to gravitate toward that way of thinking. And I think part of it is growing in a rough place at a rough time, because I think Miami now is a different place to how it used to be in the 80s and 90s when it was just a different era in the US, right? Like, a lot of people will be like, oh wait, isn't that Cocaine Cowboys? It's like, well, yeah, there was a lot of that going on. But I think there was just a lot of crime at that time, and it was just a different time, you know. People now, are, you know, it's pretty common to see people hang out at food trucks now, and there's like art galleries are kind of a thing now and stuff, right? And I think we're in a better place. I mean, besides the pandemic and problems with the economy, of course, before that was happening, I think the U.S. was probably in the best golden era that it's ever been in terms of economy, you know, people working at, you know, getting jobs like in tech and at Google, and everyone buying the latest iPhones and stuff. It's just different culture and mindset compared to like back then. But I don't know, I guess where I grew up and when I grew up kind of affected the way that I think. So I wouldn't say I've had it rough. I know people that have had it worse and rough, so I can't sit here and be like, well, I've had it the toughest of anybody. But I had my own version of tough, and it made me like kind of, I guess, gain grit, or I cut my teeth on things that I think the majority of the average person doesn't go through or doesn't experience or doesn't witness firsthand. So that kind of like gave me this personality of like, so when I hear somebody like complain, right, about something, in my mind, it's like, are you complaining about something that is valid, right? Or are you kind of complaining just to complain? Because that happens, and it happens to everybody. I do it too sometimes, where I have to catch myself and I'm just like, why am I complaining? I have it pretty good. But yeah, sometimes like if, you know, if there's somebody like a direct who's working for me or whatever, complains about something that I consider kind of silly, it's just that old school mentality of like, you know, lock it up, you know, tough it out kind of kicks in. Again, going back to where I grew up and when I grew up and the people I grew up around and stuff. And I just kind of go like, stop complaining, suck it up, just push forward, focus your energy on that rather than, you know, kind of whining and stuff. I don't know if any of that makes sense though.
No, but I get you, man. I think sports, you know, with my two sons, it's definitely taught me the same way. Like, it's very, it makes things very tangible. And I think that's what a lot of this generation is having trouble with. Like, if you work hard, you can see it, and you'd see it fastest with sports. It's like, well, did you win or did you not win? You know, and there's obviously lessons between the two where it's not completely black and white, sure. But you learn
that. Oh, I don't want to make it like a generational thing, because I don't see it that way. I actually see it as an individual thing. Yeah. Like I know people my age and even older that I just kind of want to grab them by the scruff of their neck and be like, get a hold of yourself, you know?
I see it more now. I think because with my kids, and I see the type of environment and how sheltered the schools are kind of making. I mean, the main thing is not making kids feel bad. And I guess there'll be more studies about that, but they're doing everything they can to avoid championing first place. You know, I think my son was playing basketball, and instead of, you know, when I was growing up, it was called MVP, most valuable player, right? So he got that award, but it was called Coach's Player Award. I was like, what is that? It's like, they're like kind of PC. Yeah, they're changing things around in that sense in every which way. And I see it how it kind of softens the competitive spirit a bit. And I think...
Softening your kids? Is that what you're making your kids soft?
Honestly, the participation award trophy is...
You sound like you're from Miami.
I'm that sports dad, dude. I'm that sports dad where put in the work, you get rewarded for it. But when I see kids just getting trophies just to be there, I was like, I think that's hurting the kid, right? You don't have to be abusive to the kid, but like, there is something about, if you want to get that trophy, just, you got to follow and do what the number one kid is doing. And that's going to set you up better for life rather than expecting something for nothing. Right. And a lot of that is, I relate to you with sports, what I've learned it from. And, personality traits, the same thing, of course, right? There's outliers, but I think I'm saying this generational, I think there's more of it than when we were growing up. Of course, we had lazy friends and friends that didn't go anywhere and exactly where they are, right? But I think that it's that element that separates I guess, entrepreneurs from people that work in the industry. If we just pull it back to, you know, game development, we see it all the time within the studio, right? It becomes a bitch fest, right? After something happens. And then you just have this group. And, you know, for a while, I was guilty of being a part of that group until I stepped away from it because it was just taxing. You know, it's emotionally draining, physically. I don't want to show up to work anymore, right?
Being a part of what group? Sorry, I missed that part.
Just being part of a group that complains about work, right? There's...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. spark for change or like doing something about it. And I really do think there are a lot of game developers who have the capacity to do something on their own and be successful at it. But a lot of it's a mixture of a fear. It's a mixture of comfortability, and it's a mixture of that, right? Just not wanting to do something.
Yeah.
So they're kind of stuck in that. And I think it'll be interesting to see after this whole pandemic goes over how remote affects game developers type of thing, because I would imagine in this time when we started Godemix, right, we were kind of pioneering this work from wherever you want. Don't worry about it. And then suddenly kind of get thrown into this. I'm wondering now, like, are more people going to be more empowered to start doing freelancing more, doing things on the side because they have more time? They're not being watched by producer or managers now. They can technically get their work done and still have time to do something else. I'm very curious how more people are going to actually be pushed in this direction. There will be more kind of Godemics going on.
So I will say this. I've heard at my last studio job, and you know, going back to what you're saying about the toxic kind of complainer crew, I did get sucked into that. That's my fault for allowing myself, because I've never been that. I've always been the person that if people are kind of complaining or just whining in a room, I'm the guy that walks in and goes, "All right, what are we complaining about? Let's stop wasting time complaining. Let's figure out what the problems are and let's find solutions, take action, implement the solutions, and push forward and make stuff happen." And, you know, I kind of let my guard down. I let myself get sucked into that kind of toxic, dark way of thinking. And I quickly kind of reacted, kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, spiritually or emotionally, whatever. But one day I just kind of snapped out of it and I was like, what am I doing? I'm sitting, you know, taking lunch breaks, being around a group of people, not bad people, but just people that get kind of sucked into that negative space, and that negative energy spreads. And then next thing you know, you're sitting in a group of people, maybe having a beer or whatever, and, you know, someone starts complaining about a manager at work, right? Or the guy that owns the company, or the wife of the guy that owns the company, or HR, whoever, right? They start singling people out. They're like, yeah, this person makes, you know, life worse, and they're stupid, and they don't know, how did they get that job? They start complaining, and then others join in and they start voicing who they hate at work and stuff like that. And it becomes this whole kind of drama soap opera thing where people are just kind of, I don't know, planning how to backstab or just talking, you know, trash about people. And then one day I found myself in that situation and I'm just like, what am I doing? This isn't me. Like this ain't me. Like, hold up a second. And I kind of took a step back and I started, you know, not agreeing with people. Like, you're sitting there with like coworker who's kind of down and during that negative space. So what they do is they complain, and their subconscious hope is for you to join in and complain with them and kind of partake in their misery, right? Their self-imposed misery. Cause that's whatever, that feels good in the moment. And I started doing the opposite when people would be like, man, yeah, this, can't believe this guy at work. And can you believe he said this, this, and then I would just be like, are you sure that's what they meant? Have you talked to them and worked this out? Have you tried working it out? Don't you think working it out would actually make work more pleasant 9 to 5 between the two of you? Plus your work would improve, right? And I would start throwing all these things that would counter what they're saying. And it was like, huh? What? Like, they're just surprised that you're not agreeing and choosing to go down this path of, like, I don't know, self-misery or whatever you want to call it, right? I think everyone has been through that. If you've worked at any organization in the civilian world or whatever, then you've seen that. The politics, the nepotism, the cliques, the high school cliques that start to form up, right? This group versus that group. And when you start, when you don't take sides and you just start to like point out the obvious to people, it's amazing how quickly people start to snap to reality. They start going, what am I doing too? You're right. This is stupid. This isn't high school. We're all adults and stuff. So I went through that my last job. And one of the things that I don't want to do with this company that we created together was allow that kind of negative culture to happen here. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I share the same kind of thinking, right? I never really detailed exactly the days leading up to the moments of the Spark layoff, right? My first and only layoff, but that changed everything. I always replay that scene in Looper. I don't know if you've seen that movie with Bruce Willis, right? But
yeah, I remember.
There's a scene where the kid, the main character, Joseph Levitt, sees that he goes one path, the kid is going to change into this dark alley, right? And then he made a decision to kind of change that fate. So like that was kind of like my moment at Spark, where I had the layoff, where I completely changed my way of thinking about approaching the game industry. Because up to that moment, there was complaints and they're whining and being easily sucked into that like vortex of self-misery, as you put it, right? But then after that moment, like I had to take a step back. It's like, what is this leading to? Right? Of course, I will keep working on different studios, but eventually there's going to be a point where it's the same thing's going to happen, because a lot of that is outside of control. And there's always going to be assholes at every studios that you don't click well with. And I think it was like months before the layoff at Spark where I was throwing warning signals. I think I should have set up more fireworks, but we were working on the same level together. And, you know, there were things that were like out of whack, out of sync. We were working on a level without a level designer. That was my first red flag. It's like, what levels don't require a level design on the game?
Dude, you didn't throw red flags. You straight up predicted. I still remember when you turned and looked at me with that kind of nervous. It's like this smirk that you do where it could be like the end of the world and you're just kind of like
that kid, yeah.
Get ready. Hold on to your butts. Yeah. It's about to get bumpy. And you said August. I still remember that.
Yeah.
And you were like, August. August is going to be when we got to start looking for jobs. And I'm like, oh shit. And I don't remember what time was the present at that time, how ahead of August we were, but I clearly remember you saying August. And then August came and yeah, it happened like clockwork.
Yeah. There's a consistency within the game industry that I found. It's like when tomfoolery happens, misscheduling and overpromising happens, there's like this cascading effect of it always happens at every studio. It's like a part of the team gets laid off, morale gets down, toilet paper suddenly gets expensive. People are biased to not use as many towels. Friday donuts are not around anymore. It's like it's always the same effect that happens. And it always starts with like, we can't get that done in time. It's like, well, we gotta. It's like, well,
yeah,
the rest of the team is crunching. Why aren't you? It's the same toxic management that happens throughout a studio that never ends well. Like, unless you're Rockstar, right? Even then, you know, Jason Schreier would just make an article out of you. But like, there's no good ending with that, where I've heard of a studio that does something like that and then completely everyone is there, right? Even with Naughty Dog, we all have friends there, right? There's huge turnover rates. It's always the same, different crew, maybe same-ish leadership, but it's always a different working crew on these sequels. And it's sad. And I hope remote working and what's happening with the pandemic kind of changes that, because, you know, with no people having to be in the office at Naughty Dog, I can't imagine them forcibly probably still crunching, but at least they're they're able to kind of be in their homes and have breaks, you know?
Yeah. So this is what I will say about that. At my last job, right when I was kind of at the end where I was like, I'm about to quit in my mind, right? I sat down and I talked with the owners and some leadership, and I was just super honest and said, hey, look, this is, you know, we're in the 21st century. I don't think that it makes sense as traffic gets worse in major cities, and Austin has exploded in growth. I mean, you can look at all kinds of business and news articles. Austin has been exploding for years. And now lately that curve has just shot up even sharper, with Tesla and all, you know, all these companies moving here and stuff. But traffic has just been getting worse and worse. And I was kind of, I went from when I moved here 6 years ago, my commute, was super short. You can jump on the Mopac Expressway is one of the main highways. It's almost like, so 35 would be like saying the 405, and Mopac is kind of like saying the Hollywood, the 101. So it's one of the main arteries here. And when I got here, just to test what the traffic was during rush hour, I purposely got on the Mopac Expressway to test it out. And it was fine. The slowest I was going was 30 miles an hour sometimes. And, you could get from point A to point B in like 15 minutes. Now the same track actually takes over an hour. And it feels more like LA traffic. So it has gotten more congested. And my point with that is, I was telling leadership at my last job, the studio that I moved to Austin for, that, you know, nobody likes traffic. I know I'm not speaking just for myself when I say that there's a lot of people who are wasting an hour commuting each way. It hurts quality of life. It makes you not look forward in the mornings to going to work, because it's, you know, it's like, I got to battle traffic first. And I try to make a case for letting people work from home and stuff. And they straight up said, nope, this is a collaborative environment. We can never do that. And I kept pushing for it. And then I felt like they were kind of being patronizing by telling me like, well, think about security. Like, security is a big deal. We can't let you work because of security. And I'm just kind of like, someone can hack the studio just as they can hack. And if anything, your workforce is all spread out. So if somebody wanted to hack, it's much easier to hack one location where you know all the servers and there's like one way in, right? Rather than trying to track down, you know, 100, 200 individual employees. But anyway, but there's other things too. Like someone could break into the studio.
Yeah.
That's not impossible. Someone can do that. So you can't. So the argument to me didn't make any sense. It was whatever, it's he said, she said kind of thing. But the story was they said no, and eventually I kind of reached my breaking point and I walked out. I didn't walk out, I quit. But just like that, I didn't even consider any counter offers, which they tried to, but I said no, I'm done. Funny enough, the day that my last day, like my last Friday, I was leaving, one of the lead producers pulled me in a room and tells me, hey, good news. They asked me to come deliver this news personally. So can you close the door and stuff? So we go in a conference room, close the door. It's just two of us. And he's like, well, we've decided to let you work remote from home full time. You get to keep all your benefits and you can work 100% from home. And, you know, they thought that would make me be like, oh man, okay, great. I'm not quitting anymore. I'll stay. Right. It had the opposite effect, because now I'm like, hold on a second. So all those reasons you gave me while work from home is impossible, you're now telling me that the whole time it was possible and you were just basically, you know, giving me a bunch of BS to my face when I had all these other meetings, right, leading up to that point. So that made me even more upset. And I was just like, you know what? Keep your offer for someone else. Hopefully other people from now on can work from home remote, but I'm out of here. He was surprised. He was like, really? Like, you're not even going to consider? I'm like, no, I'm done. I'm going to this place, Domain. We're all going over there right about now, and we're going to have drinks and stuff for my send off, and I'm gone. See ya. And I said, you know what, let's get a company together and let's do the remote thing, you know, ourselves. And One thing that a lot of people, when I was in those meetings with leadership where they were trying to convince me that working from home is not possible. So they just kept throwing all these reasons why it's not possible. Rather than finding solutions, they were just throwing, you can't do it because of this, you can't do it because of that. Right. The crazy thing is that we were able to do it. And one of the things that keeps coming up from people is like, well, if people work from home remote, they're not going to work. You can't track them. You can't see over your shoulder what they're doing. Right. And I've always said, like, those people are going to do that anyways.
Yeah.
Because at my last studio job, I knew who the guys were. There was a crew of people and they were the ones who just slacked off. They would come in late. They would leave early. They would take off for a multitude of reasons. They would take long lunches. They would go to lunch early and come back from lunch late. They would skip Fridays because of allergies. They would do all kinds of stuff. They would take these breaks. They would go on walking breaks. I'm not a smoker and I have friends that are smokers, so I don't want to single them out. It's not that smokers take breaks and don't work. People that don't want to work use the excuse of smoke breaks to not do work. So there was the usual culprits that would disappear. Whether they were on a smoke break or just to go out on a walk, they would disappear for 20, 30 minutes at a time, several times, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a day and not get any work done. And you could see it because when you worked on their team, you could see who were the guys who were slacking off because you're getting your work done and they have, you know what they have to do, right? Maybe they're doing some environment props or, you know, doing a world building pass or whatever it is they're doing. And you already hit your milestones for the week or the month. And you could see because you're working on the same team that they're behind, right? Maybe you're doing lighting and you needed that room or that area at least first passed up so that you can do a lighting pass and you can't get your lighting pass done because they haven't even finished the first pass. And now they're behind by a few weeks. And it's always those guys, you know, like I used to have this one guy who was one of the biggest offenders of that. And on top of him disappearing all the time, he would come with I don't have a tablet on me, but you know, like a little tablet, he would have it next to his desk, right? For a little kickstand, put on his headphones and you would see him sitting there just swiping, just looking for the next show to watch on Netflix or whatever. And you're just kind of like, are you serious right now? I'm working. Every time I turn around, you're still looking through the menus, trying to find a good show to watch. You know, one time I saw this same guy, this is hilarious. He was on one project. He was sitting next to me. He was already behind on all his work. All right. So this guy should be busting ass to catch up. Instead, he's sitting there watching Netflix and looking for shows to watch. I see him open up his typical, office drawer on his desk, like one of those aluminum metal ones. He opens it up just all nonchalant. This is like 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, by the way, reaches in, pulls out bottled scotch. He had a scotch glass already in there, pulls that out, pours himself a drink, puts it back, and he's just sitting there just sipping on his scotch at 10 a.m. looking through the menus because he still can't find a good show to watch on Netflix. And I'm just like, wow, man. So there's people like, that's an example of like an extreme case, by the way. In most places, that person would be terminated. But anyway, he managed to find a nice niche.
Have shown me it is the best place to hide if you are that lazy person. Jobs, to be honest.
It's true. It's true.
Facebook, look at Google, man. It's a playground for adults. It's like they have 24/7 buffets and cafeterias. It's like discouraging people from ever leaving the place. That's the main point. But it also discourages people or lazy people, inviting them to don't do any work. And it's I don't know if that's the most, it's a weird balance. Because of course, Facebook is a multi-billion company. Google is as well. But when I talk about, when I think about, you know, their earlier achievements versus now, I definitely feel there's a slowdown. Like, what has Facebook done lately? You know, that's the famous question. It's like, are these things really structured in a way that invites success and challenging employees, right? So there's a balance here that also helps with what I think the remote working is doing, right? So if there's a place to play, to congregate, to kind of get team morale up, yeah, have a physical location for that. But when there's real work to be done, the best place to do is at home, right? Because free of distractions at your own time, which is what I'm seeing with a lot of these game companies. Like you said, right? I've seen people like that. I've seen characters like that. It's very, and it, I will also say it's very hard to terminate them unless, I don't know. It's, I think I told you the other day, it's so hard to get fired in the game industry unless you are pretty much.
It is.
Like, it has to be like, obviously, very bad scum. You did something. You start slapping women in the workplace. You start like strangling random people at the urinal. You
know? Yeah.
That extreme. Because there's only two or three people I've heard that got fired while I was working there, and they did some effed up shit, and I was like, that makes sense. But I kind of want to kind of talk about Godemic stuff, because I think we've always been in this crash course of business, because me and you both don't have a business degree. We're learning a lot of this on through experience, and honestly, I always been better at learning it through fucking up rather than like through books. I've never been really good at school and stuff. So
same here.
Yeah.
I have a funny story about that.
Yeah.
I have a funny story about that. So when my whole, I guess, wannabe career aspirations to go into the military and have them, because I wanted to go into the military and have a full, not enlist for like a 4-year tour or anything, but like I wanted to go in for life. When that kind of went out the window, I ended up going to my local community college, because if you're really, really poor, they'll give you like a stipend thing, and it covers enough for like, you know, the expensive ass math books, and all that stuff, and the tuition fees. Anyway, I ended up picking up as a hobby. One of my best friends in high school, wanted to be a game programmer, like an actual software engineer, and get a really smart guy, super smart. And he ended up going to the Marine Corps instead of games. I ended up going to games instead of Marine Corps. Anyway, he's the one that got me into games, because he's the one that taught me that a lot of PC games, they don't really advertise it, but if you dig into the files, you'll find like level editors and mod tools and stuff. So for fun, I started learning that stuff, and I loved it. Like, it was like this, just a great connection, you know, game development. I just loved it. And no one ever told me you could be a game developer or any of that stuff. It just, I played games as a little kid, but now that I was using mod tools and stuff, I was able to do stuff. So I taught myself like 3ds Max. I taught myself modeling, UV mapping, texturing, rigging, animation, even scripting, because to get, you know, characters or new weapons in like your favorite FPS game on PC, you would have to do like some scripting stuff. That's how I got like into games, just by like modding and stuff. So I kind of learned the hard way. And when I was in community college, I was on a modding forum. I used to mod the original Far Cry when that came out, and it had great mod tools. Like the sandbox engine was freaking awesome, the sandbox editor. And I went from doing levels to actually going really deep into rigging and animating new like FPS weapon assets for your character and stuff. And making the weapons and rigging them, putting them in game. So I was on a forum, and somebody hit me up on the forum once and said, "Hey, I have this sword. Would you mind putting this sword in the game and scripting everything?" I was like, "Sure. That looks like fun. I haven't done that before." So I did it in like one night, and I sent it back. I thought it was like a fellow modder. It turned out being like a guy scrounging the forums to recruit devs that knew CryEngine for like a startup game studio in Montreal. I was in Miami, of course. And he hits me up. He's like, "Hey, I don't know how you did this so fast, but we love it." And I'm like, "We? Like your mod team?" And he's like, no. "I'm at a game studio. We just got like funding. We're a startup, but we're based in Montreal. We're working on a new game, new IP and we've licensed the CryEngine from Crytek. Would you be interested in relocating to Montreal if we relocate you and working here?" And I'm just like, close. Like I was just, it just caught me by surprise. I was like, what the heck is this? Some kind of weirdo running a scam or something? What is this? Mm-hmm. So I had no idea. The guy was asking for a portfolio. This is how ignorant I was. When he was asking for a portfolio, my first thought was, he wants me to go to Office Depot and pick up like a trapper keeper. Like, is that what he means?
No, he wants your headshots.
Makes no sense. But it made no sense to me. That was what popped in my head. That's how like dumb I was, or ignorant, or whatever. And I didn't know who to ask to about that, because I didn't know anyone who knew anything about games. I didn't know anybody in the industry. So I had no idea who I could ask. And then one day at my community college, I was like, oh, they got like a technology department. Let me go. So I went up and there's a bunch of people there. And I'm like, does anybody here know anything about a portfolio? And everyone looks at me like, what? Like the secretary's there and all these people walking around. I kind of stopped the whole office. I'm like, does anyone know what a portfolio is? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, a portfolio in the games industry, anybody? And everybody's like, what's up with this kid? Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, never mind. So as I was walking out and the door was closing, this one guy came out, like came after me. He's like, hey, wait a second. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I don't know anything about that, but there's this guy, Umberto, at the Wolfson campus downtown, and he teaches Maya. And I'm like, Maya? Oh, that's that 3D program. I use Max. And he's like, well, he teaches Maya. Maybe he knows something about that. I heard he used to work in the games industry or something like that. I was like, okay. So I visited this guy and he had this Maya lab downtown. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And I'm like, you guys just have like these 30 workstations here. You guys like do Maya stuff? And he's like, yeah, yeah. So I showed him my portfolio, and according to him, it was better than all of his students who were actually trying to do Maya for real and get into some kind of creative, whether it was film or games. They just taught Maya in general. And he was like, you need to take my class. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? He's like, no, you need to, you don't understand. Let me show you something. He showed me like the best work from his students. And he's like, this is like what I have from my best students and they're great, but look at your stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. I guess it's okay. And he's like, no, you need to take my class. And I'm like, I don't have time for that. He's like, just take it as an elective. It'll count towards your, you know, AA degree or whatever. I'm like, oh, all right. In that case, sure. And then he taught me what a portfolio was and all this stuff. Anyway, fast forward, when I finished my AA there, which is just a couple of years or whatever, right? Community college. I wanted to go to like a 4-year school and keep going. I was like, all right, this is going to be my career, you know, doing something with CGI, computer animation. So I couldn't go anywhere. I wanted to go to USC because Paul DeBevec was there and he's like the pioneer VFX. I wanted to do like film VFX and stuff. But because I was out of state, it was extra expensive. And plus me and my family were broke, so couldn't do anything there. And when I would try to put my parents as co-signers for like student loans, it would actually make it worse. Like schools started telling me, you got to stop putting is there anyone else you can put on? And I'm like, no, I don't have anybody else. Like, aunts and uncles, they're in Colombia and stuff, you know, because I'm from Colombia. So I'm like, my only family here is my immediate family. They're like, well, your parents got shit credit and they are actually making it worse for you. It's bad enough you have no credit, but adding them on actually makes it worse. I'm like, damn. And then one day, because I was looking at UCF as well, because they're hooked up with like EA in Orlando. They have like this FIA program. I think it's like FEIA. Yeah. I forgot what it stands for. And they actually, like, for the best students, they're straight internships straight into EA, right? The Madden team and all that works over there. But I couldn't get there either because it was really expensive for UCF and all this stuff. And then one of the schools I talked to was I'm getting to the main point of my story. One of the main schools I talked to was Vancouver Film School, VFS. And I've always wanted to go to Vancouver. I still haven't been, but I've always wanted to go, even since I was young, for whatever reason. I don't know why. And I was like, oh man, if I could get into Vancouver Film School, that's one of the best schools in the world for like computer graphics, and animation and stuff. And plus it's in Vancouver. Oh, if I could get there, it'd be like so awesome. So I'm talking to like the counselor on the phone. they're, I don't know how they are now, but at that time they were super picky. So you had to first like create like a profile with them and submit a portfolio. And if your portfolio was what they considered good enough, then they would even talk to you. If not, they would just basically weed people out by looking at the portfolio and going like, nah, this person's a joke. This person's not taking this seriously. And they wouldn't even call you back. They would just end all communications. So I sent my portfolio thinking it would get rejected. And they called me, they wanted to contact me and stuff. They were like, hey, your portfolio is a perfect fit. You're the right kind of student we're looking for here at BFS. I'm like, oh, damn, that's awesome. Okay, great. What's the next step? What can we do? So they're like, well, we'll arrange for you to talk to a counselor on the phone. He'll talk to you and we'll see about when we can get you into BFS. And I'm like, dude, this is awesome. I'm going to leave fucking Miami and I'm going to go to Vancouver and have this awesome career, probably doing film or who knows what the hell. As long as I'm out of Miami, I'm doing this for a living. I'm set. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the counselor guy and, he's asking me all these questions. He sounds super friendly, right? And he's asking me all these typical questions like, oh, how'd you get into this? You know, who taught you, you know, your portfolio, talk about this thing and that thing. And it's going really well. And then he gets to the most important question, which is, so how do you intend to pay for VFS? And I'm just like, oh, so I don't know if you guys have like, you know, maybe you guys have scholarships or some kind of help or anything for like students that are really good. I mean, I'll work for it. I'll do whatever I have to. And he stops me and he chuckles. I'm not exaggerating. True story. He goes, what scholarships? What do you mean? And I'm like, well, I can't afford it. So is there anything we can do? And he's like, you're America. You guys have all the money in the world. You don't need a scholarship. And I was like, wow, holy shit. I wish I remembered that dude's name. Yeah. What a fucking asshole he was. So I was just like, I'm not America. I'm one freaking person. And if I did have all the money in the world, I wouldn't be asking you for a scholarship. I'd probably buy Vancouver Film School. Like, what the hell are you talking about? So he pissed me off. And I literally like told him to fuck off on the phone. That was my last comment. I was like, fuck you, hung up. And I kind of just sat there just staring at nothing, just going like, I can't go to USC, can't go to UCF, can't go to Vancouver Film School. Well, I could either give up and go work at a grocery store forever, or I can fucking do this shit myself and make all these people eat the words. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty obvious what I ended up choosing to keep pushing forward instead of feeling bad for myself, instead of being like, oh, the world didn't give me a chance. I don't have anything. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I can't get, you know, student loans or any credit or anything like that. So instead of going, you know, selling drugs or whatever, like a lot of other people do in Miami, I was just like, I'm just going to keep pushing forward. Screw it. I'll do it myself. Yeah. And it was a long and hard road, but I was able to, you know, get traction and get to where I am now.
Well, coming from a guy who had student loans, in retrospect, he probably did you a favor there.
Actually, that's true. That's a very good glass half full way of looking at it. So, yeah. Although the guy was annoying and pissed me off, yeah, in a way, he inadvertently helped me out.
He helped you out. I think it's like one of those, the haters are the one that motivates me the most, like the challenges.
I've always been that way too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like praises, but, you know, it doesn't really push us to do anything different. It just tells us to keep doing what we're doing, right? So I think a mix of both is always healthy. But I'm very much the same way, man. Like I think if I look at my school experience, it's the friendship, it definitely helped. I think if you can do it, you should try. But I think there's so many resources now that you can avoid that whole thing. And our industry is still, I don't know. I still have yet to go to a place that asks for my degree. I don't even know where my degree is, to be honest. It's like, what do we show?
No.
It's like, what exactly?
I don't know where my AA is. My AA from community college. I don't know where the hell that is.
Yeah.
And I never need it. No one's ever asked for it ever. The moment they gave it to me and I walked away from community college, to this day, no one has ever asked me, can we see your degree?
Nobody does. I will say this for international students who are trying to get in the United States, it's huge. It's key. It's part of their how they get their visa, because there's only a select few that we let into the States to kind of work and take American jobs, basically, or contribute. Sorry, not take away. Contribute to American jobs. But other than that, if you're in the U.S. born and you're lucky to be here and you want to work in a U.S. company, game company, yeah, degrees are like nothing. And you can really get by with the way more online resources now than ever before. I think if I was growing up in this age, I would, even though guiding myself to figure things out would be always tough in any era, but I think this era especially would be so much easier with community and Discord and all this different types are telling you how to do things for YouTube alone, you know. It was nice, man. I mean, I told you an hour was going to go by quick, but I think I learned more about you, even though we talk like all day every week. We don't really talk.
You can always ask me, man. It's just, I forget about this stuff. So I'm not just like talking about this every day. But when people ask me, I'm just like, yeah.
It's a good reminder. I think when I'm like stressed out, especially like this past 2 weeks, just through doing our milestones and stuff, I always like to revisit to, you know, if you talk to Brandon like 5-10 years now, how lucky would he think of me now to be at home, to kind of do what I love, and to kind of call the shots? That's the most important thing. That's the biggest change. Like any directions that we want to take it, we can, versus, you know, in those little bubbles there where it's a complaint fest and there's really nothing you can do. It's someone else's company, right? You can only do so much.
Yeah.
But we're actually finally master of our own destiny here. And it's been a fun journey. We didn't get to the fun stories. Maybe we'll do a part two of like what this business development and talking to like these characters, I would say.
Just some funny shenanigans. Didn't happen.
I would love to compare stories, man. If this is normal, you always have this guy where you're kind of pitching, selling his company. He ends up selling his own idea at his company. It's like, what? A reversal as a bargaining trip. Never had that before. But we had some funny things that I constantly have to check with you. It's like, is that normal? I'm new to this, but I'm
There is like weird stuff that you don't, that catches you off guard. You're not expecting it. And then somebody says something that is so out there that you're just like, come again.
Yeah. But that's the way it is. It is very crazy. I am, like I said, looking forward to seeing what the next couple of years look like, not just with us, but the industry as a whole, because everyone, I don't know, it's very different, right? We went into this where nobody wanted to remote, no companies wanted to do it. And now we're going to be finishing this year where everybody's doing remote and seeing how much that sticks, right? It's different. What a big change to the whole world, but our industry alone is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
To kind of think about.
Yeah. I think actually a good, I don't know how you try to like use the podcast, if like sometimes you want to actually like kind of educate people on stuff. But one thing I realized from leaving my previous job where they said no to working remote. And I wasn't I had no IT technical knowledge at the time, so I can't dispute it. So if they tell me for security reasons, no. For XYZ reasons, no, right? There's no way for me to argue with that because I'm just not knowledgeable. Now that we have our own company, we've been working remote and we've been solving these security, IT, how do people work remote and protect important data? I mean, data from multi-million dollar companies and stuff like that, right? Is that even possible? And if it is, how to do that? Well, we've actually figured that out and we continue to figure that out and get better at it. But sometimes I feel like when we talk with a potential partner and they ask us simple questions like, how do you guys work remote? How do you guys protect information, right? A lot of times it's not that they're quizzing us, it's that they don't know themselves and they're trying to find out because they're like, well, you guys have been working remote for years. We just started doing it 4 months ago. how do we do it? Help us.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that would be an interesting topic. I think a lot of listeners out there would want to hear about the actual technology and how security can be as good working from home as it is at a studio, possibly even better in some ways. We're at that point where we're cloud computing and network security can be hardened and made that good. But you don't know what you don't know, right? A lot of studios don't realize or don't even know that. So it's not on the radar. They just kind of go, no, but I heard that working remote is bad. So no, we can't do that at the studio. It's like, well, hold up.
Yeah.
Have you actually done the research? Do you know for sure? Well, no, that's what we heard. That's how it's always been. Well, it's time to change your thinking and get the program.
I will say this. Yeah. Like you, man, the IT department used to be like a huge mystery where I would be friends with IT people, but never really care to ask what they do exactly. Right. So I would say this after years of kind of setting this up and kind of figuring this out and uncrossing the wires, so to speak, most IT departments are trash. And our experience with them has been horrific. And knowing a little piece of that mystery have kind of at least helped us into understanding what bullshit that's been crafted. So, yeah, I think a part two, a part three, you know, like, man, there's so many parts of Godemics that we had to figure out way before everyone else. That is an episode in itself for sure. And I think people will definitely want to figure that out because as people, this is what I foresee, right? As people are sitting at home, kind of discovering what we discovered years ago of the benefits of being at home and getting work done, I think they're going to go down this path of like, well, I mean, yeah, I phone in and do meetings. So why can't I do this with multiple companies? Why do I have to be just singular to one, where I don't, you know, the first obstacle of commuting is completely gone. I can just log on to another Zoom and suddenly talk to another company and earn twice as much because it's as long as I get the work done, right? I think a lot of people are starting to freelance and contract on the side in the result of this. And I think that just makes the industry stronger. It just makes people, I always go back to the spark days of the layoff. Like that point, I had a strong kind of direction of not just relying on a single source of income. And that was my problem. It's like Spark has my whole life, 8 hours a day, always, right? And it was at that point where I felt like, wow, how dangerous of that. Because I think a lot of game developers are having that problem because now, yeah, you can put your whole and life soul into a game company that you don't own, right? And then at a moment's notice, you can be gone and you just have to deal
Google
with
Stadia, which just happened. I mean,
I called that like 2 years ago saying like Google doesn't have a good track record besides Google Maps and Google Search Engine.
Yeah. You know,
like they always cancel way before figuring things out. And
yeah, they kind of, from the outside, it looks almost like they change their mind all the time.
Yeah.
Where they start something, you know, Google Photos or whatever. And then it's like, all right, this is discontinuing.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah? That's kind of what I'm talking about. Like tech companies before they had the slides and swings and 24/7 cafeteria and basically sleep pods, right, in the living room, right? I think there's a slower growth of innovations in those companies. And a lot of it's just like they're treating their place as maybe they should as like a playground, but like the work is just not getting done. Because why would you?
Yeah.
If you tell me that there's activities from 9 to 5 in the cafeteria and then drop
so
by
much room for
and watch a premiere movie before everybody else gets to it. It's like, why would I even work? I'm happy to be here. Yeah. Morale is up. Sure. But when does the work get done? Yeah. Google Stadia completely botched it. It was insane to kind of see, and this is going in, but we'll end it soon. To see Google Stadia with all the money in the world, their launch was so bad where they just did not pay attention to how to properly launch consoles in the game industry with so much data to kind of look at. They just went off and did their own thing. And I didn't know what it was. It's like $10 to buy a controller. $150 for a console, but I thought the whole thing was not to have a console. I was like, what is up with the messaging?
I will say this. I was not a believer in game streaming because in my head, I'm just like, dude, you're streaming a game. It has to be responsive in the moment. You know what I mean? Like, how can you enjoy a game like that? But I did try, I think it was during Amazon Prime Day, like in October, whenever it was. PlayStation Now, which is their streaming, you know, PlayStation's game streaming service, was on sale, like half price for like a year. So I was just like, oh man, that's less than the cost of a game and stuff. I'll take a shot. So I got it. Dude, I was blown away. I was like, what kind of black magic is this?
Yeah.
Like, I don't like Sony. I've used some of the other ones. Like, I used the new one, Amazon Luna, and that one is still kind of in beta. So I think I'll give them the benefit of the doubt because they're still figuring it out. It's still like beta and stuff, right? But I got invited to the beta and I tried it. The beta is not free, by the way. You get like 7 days free. And then after that, they start automatically charging you like it's not a beta. And I'm like, well, hold up, slow down. So I tried it. And I couldn't play it. It was really bad. I tried playing with my Wi-Fi network and it was bad. The latency is just horrible. Like, your character standing there, and if you take the joystick and churn to make your character go right, you basically churn now. And then your character does that.
Yeah.
And you churn left. And it's like, wow, you can't play a game, any game like that at all. And it was all the games on there. They don't have a lot because it's still beta, but all the games I tried were like that. And I tried on my Wi-Fi and I tried on my wired connection, and I have Google Fiber. So on both, it was the same. It wasn't better on either. It was both really bad. But with PlayStation Now, I tried it, just test it. I tried it with a wired connection to my PlayStation. It worked like if it was a game. And I know that PlayStation Now allows you to download some of the games and some are streamed. I'm a technical guy. Like, these games were being streamed, not pre-downloaded or anything like that. And they were working like if it was a native game that I put the CD or whatever into the console, both wired. And then I went with my laptop to the living room and I was like, all right, let me try on Wi-Fi. Now it's going to break down. Now there's going to be latency for sure. I fire up a game. It starts streaming to my laptop because you could play PlayStation Now on PC. And I'm just like, dude, this is black magic. How are they doing this? It's streaming through Wi-Fi to my laptop and it works with no latency. How is this possible? It just, I don't know. It blew me away. And I'm just like, man, I want to know how they're doing that because they figured it out.
Yeah, it took, I think it's like mobile phones, right? The technology just gets better way faster than everything else. And with this pandemic, streaming is explosively getting better with more servers and more like disinvestment behind these bigger companies. And I think Stadia was right in a way where they're in, you know, continuing with the technology because it's proven. It's good. It's good news for, you know, external developers who want third party exclusives. Go to Google. They're looking for content right now. But internally, you know, first party, it's hard to make games. And for them to kind of, I did think they went a little bit too much to invest into like this first party developer, and they wasted a lot of money there, and we still don't know what they were working on, but obviously it wasn't that good if they cut things off. It's sad, right? A lot of developers, again, that's the first layoff. That's another thing, Leo, like that's the first layoff I've heard during the pandemic of a game studio, which is bizarre, right? Usually it's every 2 months.
Yeah.
But like Google Stadia kind of broke the mold. And I wonder if there's more to tell. I wonder if there are more companies that are missing deadlines that are starting to lay off people, because this is a year with no layoff stories. You know, Jason Schreier is like, you know, scavenging cyberpunk stories to kind of tell. Nothing to talk about, right? That's a long period where there wasn't like a spark incident. And I'm just thinking that's dogpiling into something big. And Google State.
About cyberpunk, I was one of the people that got the PS4 version.
Yeah, mistake.
And it was pretty bad, but they were pretty cool. I got in contact with them. They did the whole refund thing, but instead of a refund, I asked for the Steam PC version, and they gave it to me. and they didn't even ask for me to send in the PS4 discs, which they originally asked for, but then they just, I guess, logistically, they're like, you know what? Forget it. Keep it. Yeah. But I've been playing it on PC. It's, oh man, it's awesome on PC with NVIDIA DLSS.
Ooh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful game.
Sick. Yeah.
Well, I want to say, man, thank you for coming on. And we're a little past an hour, but I told you it goes by really fast. This is actually the part of the podcast where I kind of throw the mic over to you and shut up. If there's anything you want to tell the good people out there to visit, to find you, how can they find you? Go for it.
Oh, you can't.
Hey, man, you're the guest.
Man, I get so hammered in my emails with so many people and companies reaching out, from recruiters to potential clients and studios that want to know how we can help them and stuff, that I'm just like, I can't even keep up with the fire hose of emails that come in and stuff. But I think it'd be cool if I'm a really open book. So if anybody wants to know, especially like other game studios out there who want like help or want to know how to work efficiently remote, because I'm not going to sit here and say we've been doing it for 25 years. I don't think anybody has, but we've been doing it for about 4 years now. And we've learned a lot in that process. You know, we've had to learn, like Brandon said, the hard way. So, we know a lot about working remote, about remote security, about, managing productions, you know, how to do Scrum and Agile remotely, scheduling, communication with your team and all that stuff. So I don't know if anybody wants to know more about that or it helps them, they should reach out to Godemix, I guess.
Yeah. Visit the site.
Info at Godemix.com, I guess, best way to reach us.
Or just go to Godemix.com and you can find all the info there. I check you guys out. Yeah, man, I got to have you back on. Do part two, part three. There's so many things we got to talk about. And like, I have listeners always ask. I just never gone into detail. I felt it was best appropriate when we're both on to kind of talk about these things. But that's it. That's the show, man. I want to thank you.
What do you have listeners ask about?
Just generally, you know, what I do outside of my apartment.
Oh, okay.
People's always curious, what's Godemix? It's like, you know, I try to make it a purpose where they hear us through other avenues. I don't like to advertise to a point where like, oh, you heard it from me. It's like you heard it from a friend of a friend. I like that better. That means it shows the signs of success right there. So it's been cool. But that's it, man. I want to thank you for coming on. We'll talk some more. I'll probably talk to you a little bit more after this, but thank you, good people,
okay,
for watching and viewing.
Have a good one. All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.